The place to be is living free. Living free in Tennessee.
Welcome to Living Free in Tennessee, where we talk about building the life you choose on your terms. Today is Monday, November 4th, 2024. And this is episode 969 of Living Free in Tennessee. And it's a Monday show. So we have all our usual segments today. And then I'm going to talk about five overlooked preps that like many homesteaders don't like. They know they exist, but they don't put time as much time into them as maybe they should have. So that's what we'll cover today. Of course, I've got Tales from the Prepper Pantry. We've got the weekly shopping report. I've got a great frugality tip from Margo, who I see is in the chat today. So it'll be a good show. And do remember, if you want me to integrate your comment or question, put the word question or comment in all caps and then write what it is. And then I will just star it and we'll work them in as best we can. Before we do that, I want to talk about today's featured event. Okay, let's talk about featured events, actually. I have been pulling featured events from events that different community members submit. And I also, of course, highlight the events we're doing here, like the tree, the partnering with trees on the permaculture homestead class we did last weekend, as well as webinars that we have coming up, Self-Reliance Festival, the Spring Workshop. We're going to be adding some cool events in 2025. And here's what has happened is people have stopped sending events in. There's a link on the homepage if you want to get your event in. And I will say this, John Willis from Special Operations Equipment has a pretty cool party on December 7th that you can RSVP to on Facebook by going to the SOE page, going to events, and then look for the post from Curie that has the RSVP form. That's December 7th. It's going to be a badass party. It's a party. It's a fun party. It's in Camden, Tennessee. I'm going to be there. We're going to be serving hollow roast coffee as well as a special sipping chocolate that we've put together for people. And the only way you can get this sipping chocolate is to go there. But what I don't want to do for the next every single episode between now and December 7th is highlight that one event. So get your events in, and I would love to highlight your event. I will be starting to talk about the spring workshop right after Jack's fall workshop. We've got a pretty good, well, I always think it's good, but we have some fun. It's going to be a little different this time. We're going to have some half day things, I believe, from some people who you have not seen at my workshop before. And that's all going to be rolled out after, of course, the fall workshop. So, you know, stay tuned for that. But would love it if you get your event in. Like if you have a meetup in Spokane, Washington, or in Bozeman, Montana, or in Phoenix, Arizona, or wherever you are, where you want to get together with people, or you're doing a rabbit class or whatever, get it in. And then that's how I pull for the featured event of the day. Okay. I also want to thank our two sponsors before we jump into stuff. And today I thought it would be appropriate, since the topic is more about preparedness than anything else, Discount Mylar Bags. That's right. DiscountMylarBags.com has been working with us for a long time since we launched our sponsorship. And Toby has a special talent in sourcing things in bulk and passing on those savings to you. But he's also spent a lot of time thinking about the best ways to preserve and store food for longer term and shorter term. So go to discountmylarbags.com if you're looking for Mylar bags, food preservation, appliances, anything of that nature. And then also, if you're interested in just learning about his philosophy on food storage, on the right-hand side, he's got some blog articles just about food storage that I think you'll find interesting. Our second sponsor of today's show is EMP Shield. EMP Shield provides a device that helps protect your electrical systems from unpredictable things that happen to electricity. The thing that's most likely to happen to me is a lightning strike on my transformer on the telephone pole. Ask me how I know. And what happens is it protects that from coming in and nailing all of your appliances, which can be a pretty expensive little endeavor. It comes with a $25,000 replacement insurance policy, by the way, and it's the only device on the market that does that. That's one of the reasons I confidently stand behind them. Use the coupon code LFTN for $50 off, and you can check out all of their products at empshield.com. Do you want to know when else we're live this week? Tomorrow, 9:30, is our first Tuesday coffee chat with John Willis and Jack Spierko, and it's the election day. So I don't know if we're going to talk about that. It's actually kind of funny because, you know, we're all aware of the election, but we're not like, my whole life revolves around the election, right? So we'll talk about with other people, whatever people bring up. You know, that's what we'll do. And then Friday, we have Homestead Happenings at 9:30. If for some reason there is post-election drama that includes rioting in cities, I may cancel my flight to the city I'm flying to go to Jack Spirko's workshop and then drive or do, you know, like figure out an alternative. So it's possible that show would get jiggered. We'll mention it if it does, but that's the deal there. With that, it's time for our first segment of today's show, and that's Tales from the Prepper Pantry, where we talk about storing what you use and using what you store. And I see we have lively people in the chat today. What do you guys do with your is your pantry ready to go? Like, are you like super organized in your pantries? Let me know in the chats. Yes, no. I had a visitor come who hadn't been to the Holler Homestead this week over the weekend, who was on like passing through on their way to help the Eversoles with a project. And he said, hey, can I see your pantry? And I thought, well, the prepper pantry is all ripped up because we took everything out of it and it's on shelves in my carport. And then we redid the roof and we're sealing the inside and redoing the inside so that I can build shelves and put all that stuff back in there. And so I was like, well, you can, but there's nothing in it. And he looked so disappointed. And I was like, tactical, go show him the pantry. And then he got to see some of the food storage we do in here as well. So that's all part of what's going on. But this week I realized something. Like, I've always been pretty good at managing my pantry, but the freezer, what happens sometimes is you have a package of something I have a chest freezer and I have upright freezers, and sometimes something gets in the back lower corner, right? That's the deal. And this year, more than any other year, that hasn't been happening, which is kind of cool. Like, I've had a few things pop up, but we are at the point where it's time to fill up the freezers again. So we're at the use it up phase in our vegetable storage and our herbal storage, right? Because, you know, while there is still stuff coming off the garden now, because our fall has been more like a nice, gentle summer. It's been kind of good for growing, as a matter of fact, as long as you water your stuff, because nature is not watering our stuff. This is the time of year it starts to get colder. We process animals and put them in the freezer. Hunting season is starting. So that means, you know, venison in the freezer. And what has typically happened at this point is the cow arrives for the next year and there's still some of the old cow left. Well, we've got it dialed in at this point, because I went through and I changed it so like one freezer is pork, one freezer is beef, and one freezer is basically chicken and everything else. And then I have an empty chest freezer. And what worked out for that is that I ended up getting the first new cow part of the year, which means I got a quarter cow last week from Kenesh. And we could just put it in the chest freezer, which means the former cow is in the beef freezer. And we're just like plowing through all the rest of those parts. And the only exception to that rule will be while I'm out of town, if Tactical wants steaks, because we're out of steaks from the original, from last year's cow, he can totally dive in on that. But also, if it's organ meat of any kind, I'm going through all of that right now, no matter if it's last year's cow or this year's cow, because I've realized like the things I don't cook are the heart, the tongue, the liver, you know, like those sorts of things don't get managed as quickly. And then I always end up with like, it's the last bits. I've got the tail, I've got the tongue, I've got the heart, and they're all delicious. So we can just, you know, process those. So it's the best year for meat organization ever. And I think part of the key to this has been, we've been very methodically eating from the freezers, and I ended up with a freezer buffer, which made it easier to keep sort of that rotation. And then being able to readjust midway through the year, because there was a point, especially right before the spring workshop in April, where it was like every bit of freezer space was used because we had pre-cooked food for the workshop and all of that stuff, right? When we had space, then having things by the kind of meat with the kind of meat and going through everything worked really great. So we're going to carry that forward into next year. Always be learning, guys. Always be learning. Yesterday, we had a Holler neighbor dinner, and it was the day after a class here. So, you know, everybody's tired, right, when we do that. And, excuse me, a little bit of hoarse throat today, and I have an audition tonight for a classical solo that I may or may not get, but having a scratchy throat going into a classical solo audition is not my favorite. Anyway, so I didn't know what to cook. And what I had was 5 pounds of ground beef in the fridge, right, that I pulled out of the freezer. And I got on Zello, and I was like, I don't want hamburgers. I don't want meatballs. I don't want taco meat. I don't want Korean beef. I don't want, you know, what else? I don't really want manwich or whatever, sloppy joes. I'm not going to make spaghetti because we don't want to have pasta. Like, I went through this whole list of stuff we didn't want to eat. And I was like, I think the problem is I don't want ground beef tonight. I don't want meatloaf. And then finally somebody piped up with chili. And I was like, actually, I do want chili. So this was fun. I got to go out in the yard and harvest all of the peppers that were around. And then in order to tell which ones were hot and not hot, I had to take seeds out and bite the seeds. The heat like resides in the seeds, right? And Tactical was the grower of most of the peppers this year. I just have one jalapeno plant and I know those are hot. And I wanted to have a good flavor balance of hot, not hot on the chilies, right, that were in there. And then I had all of the tomatoes that have been ripening on my counter because I harvested them a month ago when we had our first frost. They were all green. And we've just been getting this regular cycle of tomatoes that ripen on the counter. And then I have tomatoes in the freezer that need to be canned. And I'm like, well, I'll put some of those in the chili. And then I don't have to can those. And I don't have to open a jar of the tomato. And then we added, you know, onions and ground beef and spices. And it was a delicious chili. And the way I sped it up, because I decided halfway through the day I was going to do chili. And my philosophy on chili is low and slow for a long time. Helps all the flavors really mesh really well. So instead I like browned everything or sauteed everything on the stove and then threw it in there. My only regret was that I did not put enough garlic in at the beginning and I didn't have any garlic. I don't have any garlic powder made right now. So I don't have a good way to do any of the, like to add last minute garlic. So I was like, well, it could have had more garlic and I don't have garlic powder. So, but it was delicious. And we fed, I don't know, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 or 7 people last night. And then it turned into one of those holler neighbor dinners where everybody brought things from their refrigerator. Like we had some fried chicken. We had, you know, coleslaw and potato salad. We had charcuterie. We had olives. We had gherkin. We had salads. So it was a really fun night. And then of course, being the first like day of daylight savings time has expired and everybody worked really hard all weekend, about 7:30, everybody left and went to bed. So I stayed up. I didn't stay up super late last night, but yeah, everybody sort of chilled out. Jenny wants to know, are you freeze drying anything for future chili? Not on this batch because I'm heading to Jack Spirko's. And so any extra food right now for meals like this just goes in the freezer for Tactical to reheat while I'm out of town, because I don't have as many pre-made meals in the freezer as I usually do. So, you know, it is what it is and we'll get it done, but I'm trying to avoid having to do a bunch of weird last minute meal prep this week in addition to pre-roasting all the subscription orders, because I'll be gone for about 9 days. And if you have a subscription at Holler Roast, I will roast that coffee this week. And then I have somebody coming over to ship your coffee as your subscriptions go through. And if at the end of that, for whatever reason, somebody doesn't pay for their subscription, I just end up with a couple extra pounds of coffee. But that's how we keep people in coffee when I'm out of town and my roasting assistant can't be here and my roasting assistant cannot be here. So that's the deal with the roasting right now. Our next segment is the weekly shopping report. This is where we talk about just sort of week over week what's going on, and Joe puts this together. So Aldi was the only stop that they made, and they had normal amounts of toilet paper. Chocolate he liked was back in, and staple prices were as follows. Bread, $1.39, eggs, $2.15, whole milk, $2.88, heavy cream, $5.39, orange juice, $3.45, butter, $3.99, bacon, $3.99, potatoes, $3.59, sugar, $2.99, flour, $2.35, and 80% lean ground beef, $4.49. A 2x4x8 at Home Depot, $3.85, and a gallon of ethanol free, $3.59.9. I'm really curious to see if gas prices start going up right after tomorrow. You guys know what's happening tomorrow, right? You do. Yeah. I feel like we've just sort of been on this flat line on gas in advance of the election, and I'm wondering what happens after the election. So we'll see. We will observe, and then we will adjust as needed. Our next segment is the frugality tip, and Margo sent one in this week because Halloween happened last week, right? So Halloween, this is what she says. Halloween is her favorite holiday, and we have a big Halloween party every year. I'm going to say it in the voice of Margo. I try to pick the theme in advance and then start gathering decorations when Halloween items go on clearance, which is right now, guys. So for Halloween clearance shopping this year, so far we got $300 in retail value of items for less than $100. So hit the stores after the holiday, get more bang for your buck. Happy savings, y'all. You can also buy candy for cheap, but a friend of mine points out that the cheap candy after Valentine's Day is better quality than the cheap candy after Halloween. So put that little feather in your cap too. Next up, we have Operation Independence, where we talk about building local ongoing revenue into our lives and building skills so that we can fix things ourselves or do things ourselves so that we then don't have to earn extra money to pay a guy, right? So this is what happened this weekend. We had a small class for the Partnering with Trees class. And what that meant was I could host it in my living room. And while class was going on, I could see the presenter so I could attend the class too. And I wasn't running around coordinating the class, right? And I was able to just sort of get the lunchy things ready while we were having class and then serve lunch and get it all cleaned up. And people seemed to enjoy the class. So I talked to Tactical because usually we do larger classes here and we will still do larger classes here. But I think that, you know, 8 to 10 people in my house works really well, especially at times of year when there's extreme weather. And so we don't have to run back and forth to the basement classroom at base camp, which we can totally use for classes. And it's air conditioned and heated, so that works. But it was just a more intimate class. And I liked it a lot. And I think, like, we got to talking as we were, like, after class was over, we started planting trees. And students came and, like, of course, wanted to see how a tree was actually should be planted, right? So we got to talking and I said, really what I want to start doing is get back on sort of the monthly class schedule where I do a half day class here or a full day class on something that people want to learn about, like making cheese. And I said, I think, like, I've been talking about doing a making cheese class for a long time and I've done multiple webinars on the topic, but we haven't done a live class here. And having a class of 20 people taking the cheese class seems like it's hard to get people, you know, some amount of hands-on experience with a 20-person cheese class, but an 8 to 10 person cheese class, no problem. And then the cool thing is in person, what you can do is get some really nice cheeses and have some cheese tastings and pairings at the end of the class, maybe pop a bottle of wine and enjoy yourselves, right? And as I was describing this to the students, because this is what I want to do, right? As I'm describing this to the students, they're like, when is that class? Because we want tickets to that class. So in January or February, we are having a cheese class and we're going to be doing some more regularly scheduled smaller events throughout 2025. That's what it was sort of like a proof of concept that we did this weekend. I'm not going to dive in during Christmas coffee roasting season. So, and it's a good way to get to know people. Yeah. So Patrick's saying, sounds like a nice opportunity with lots of opportunities for one-on-one conversation. Yeah. And if you have specific questions or specific situations, you can definitely ask, you know, like get that. And I have a background in facilitation, so I will probably facilitate some workshops of more of the you walk away with your plan sort of workshop. So where we're, you know, doing work, interacting with each other, learning things, doing work. We'll do some of that as well. And for that, I need to, like, we just sat in my living room this time because it was a 5-person class, but, you know, I can move the couch to the back wall and put seats in or tables in as I want. And with the wall missing between my kitchen and the living room, that means that kitchen things can happen and the person in the kitchen can see the kitchen things. So that's the deal. I'm going to pop this one up on screen before we go to the main topic of today's show, which is where we're going next. Isaac says, out of curiosity, how much is New Zealand butter over there? And the answer is, I don't know, because I don't buy New Zealand butter. It's not that I shun New Zealand butter. I've been getting raw milk and making butter, and sometimes I buy butter, but I don't know. Next time I'm at Aldi, I can look and see if they have New Zealand butter there. But if anybody on the live stream knows that, you know, maybe you can pop that into the comments. Okay, who's ready for the main topic of today's show? So how many of you came here and were like, man, prepping, I don't want to talk about that. Ugh. Or you're like, yes, Nicole Sauce is finally talked about prepping today. Like, what side are you on? Prepping yay or prepping nay? Because I know that some people get a little turned off by the term prepping, which is silly, because it's just common sense to be prepared. Like a Boy Scout is always prepared, right? So are you a yay or are you a nay? Jen's like, I love prepping. I came to this in my head. Patrick, of course, Patrick's like, Sauce is finally talking about prepping stuff. Prepping yay. Okay. cool. I've been seeing a lot of doomsday predictions and fear reactions and all of that. And I got to thinking, Margo's like, yay, but not a pile of beans kind of girl. I got to thinking over the weekend just about how homesteading is a preparedness lifestyle. It's like you're living the life of preparedness if you do it right. And when you get a homestead, you naturally become a prepper if you stay in homesteading. And preppers who get into preparedness usually go towards having a homestead or more property so that we can be more self-sufficient is a good idea. And so these two worlds kind of come together. We have people who come at it from the side of, I like gardening and I got some chickens and now I got to figure out which pistol to buy. And then we have it from the other side where, like, I got to take care of my family or defend, and I need to pile up all the food in my garage. And then they come over too. And we've talked about a lot about how to help people who are coming at it from the beans and rice, Band-Aids, bullets, and beans sort of preparedness standpoint, and into the more like, okay, you have your tin of seeds, but do you know what to do with that tin of seeds? We've talked about that a lot. I wanted to talk about the thing we don't talk about, which is the homesteader who thinks they're prepared and is not very prepared, or not as prepared as they think they are. And it's partially because they've gone all in on one plan. And, you know, and I'm probably that person. Like, I would say I didn't even think about preparedness when I got into homesteading, although I've always been inclined towards a preparedness mindset or a safety mindset where, you know, like even in the 90s, without even thinking about Y2K, I was like, if the world ends and I can't buy spaghetti sauce at the store, I guess I better learn how to make spaghetti sauce. Literally had that thought in 1992. And then I learned how to make spaghetti sauce from tomatoes instead of canned tomato. Like, I took it, of course, to the extreme because I get really interested in things and then I take them to the extreme because I have to learn all the things then. That's the way that goes. So with all of the unrest in our economy, the looming worldwide war, I'm not going to say world war, but worldwide war, there's just pockets everywhere going nuts. Accelerating technology, which is kind of difficult to keep up with. Like, if you look at today's image, that's an AI generated image because I just wanted to learn how to do that. So I learned how to do that, right? But accelerating technology, which usually means we have a massive shift in the employment market. And that's really, that's fantastic if you're in your 60s and 70s still working, right? The push from the ruling class, and I don't have a better way, the ruling elite, like these are the people we don't know. You have faces that you're like, that's the bad guy. No, these are the people who are actually pulling the strings. Think about who that, you know, like, I don't care who that is. I care that it exists. But there's a push from the ruling class, for lack of a better term of what to call those guys, to keep we peons unhealthy, just so we die soon enough that we don't have to be taken care of too much in our older age, in debt just enough that we're too scared to go our own way. And obsessed with the two-party system, the two options that are the only options. There either is climate change or there isn't. There's no in-between, right? You're either Democrat or Republican. There's no in-between. You either eat meat or you're vegan. There's no in between. And then they keep those two options fighting with each other instead of seeing the true enemy. Instead of realizing how much more in common we have than we really realize. So is it any wonder that more and more people are going towards homesteading or wanting to get out of the cities just because they feel insecure? They feel insecure. And in a disaster, a homestead's where you want to be, right? Who thinks in a disaster, a homestead is where you want to be? Or during civil unrest? Or if there's an ice storm? Or if World War III erupts? Who says yes? Who says no? I'm just curious about this. Because it stands to reason you'd want to be in the country, right? Red Flyer Media says, I've always been on the fringe of homesteading, but the looming whatever has kicked me into overdrive. Solstice Girl says, yes. Lots of yeses popping up in the comments right now. Okay. Not in every disaster do you want to be on your homestead. Not in every disaster, I don't think. So two is one is none. And on a homestead, you've gone all in on bugging in or staying home. But what if you can't stay? Are you ready for that as a homesteader? Are you ready to leave? Because that's a big thing to overlook. And I can think of like, okay, so there was a horrible wildfire that went through Paradise, California, and pretty much killed a bunch of people and flattened a bunch of houses, like just burned everything up. And the warning they got, because it was a wind shift situation, was almost no warning. In fact, they had been advised not to evacuate originally. And then it was like, oh crap, you guys got to get out. And then there aren't very many roads into and out of Paradise. So people got stuck and that was it. And they you either lost everything, but were at least had your life, or you lost your life too, or you lost, you know, relatives. And this is where bugging in as you're all in on bugging in on your homestead doesn't serve you if you don't have a plan to leave or a way to leave. Like, I'm really lucky none of my family members died in that, because they just realized, I don't know, sooner, got the memo sooner, figured out which roads worked and which ones didn't sooner and got out. And then it was just freaking luck that my aunt and uncle were on a camping trip with their camper somewhere else. So they lost everything except for their camper, but they at least weren't home trying to figure out how to get out and how to get their pets out and all of that. And then, so as homesteaders, bugging in is not a bad plan. I'm saying, like, it, you know, if you don't need to be out in the crap, don't go out the crap, especially if you have everything you need in your homestead. But if you haven't started thinking about, if I need to leave, what does that look like? Then today is a good day to put some thought to that, right? Today is a good day to start with two is one. I can either stay here, or this is how we get out of here. And this is what we need to do to be ready to get out of here. I mean, I look at the flooding that happened in North Carolina and Eastern Tennessee, and you look at how that situation went, right? Like, people got caught up in it when the water came up so fast. The water came up really fast. Some people knew to get out, but they didn't know how to get out in advance, which meant taking a camper, right? So Margo's saying my grandparents evacuated in their camper. And in Appalachia, you weren't evacuating in your camper. You were like literally higher ground as fast as you can, right? In some cases. There's a road near me where the high water mark on the signs are twice the height of my car. Really made me think about how to leave the area. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Jenny says, this is why we have to think bigger and not wait for someone to tell us what to do. You have to, I think a lot of times your gut is already telling you. Like, I see some of the videos where people didn't die, but they're like, they say we don't have to leave, and the river's getting closer and closer and closer to their house. And I'm like, water is a really powerful thing. Water is a very powerful thing, right? Well, we look at what happened in Appalachia, and a lot of people lost a lot of stuff. And one of the coolest things about what's happened there is you haven't seen it like melt down into Mad Max era world up in those hills. And people think it's just because it's rural, but I don't think it's just because it's rural. I think it's because of, it's a culture where those, the people who live there are forgotten. They're abused. They've been walked on for a hundred years at least. And they live in a geography that's easily cut off and are already in the habit of helping each other, whether or not they, you know, 100% like each other. Like they realize there's a bigger thing here when there's a problem and you help each other. And that's intrinsic in that culture. So it couldn't have happened to in a better place, you know, in some regards, because the mindset of the culture there is we're just going to build it back. And, you know, we're not going to wait for other people to come build it back for us. Right. Isaac says they've blown me away up there. Everybody I've talked to who's been out there has been like, man, the people of Appalachia rock. They rock. But think about it. Bugging in didn't work there. What has worked there? If you knew it was coming, getting out as fast as you could. Community helping each other. And a community of people who know how to make things work without the quote unquote correct thing, right? There's skills there. There's mindset there. So the typical homesteading journey looks like I moved to the country and I got some chickens, or I moved to the city and I got some backyard chickens. I've got a friend right now, moved to the city with a yard, put in raised beds and a couple of backyard chickens. And now she's giving presentations on urban homesteading, right? And then you have the garden, and then you learn how to preserve the food. And then you're like, wow, when the electricity goes out, I'm cold. And if you can, and if you're smart, you figure out how to do wood heat, because wood heat is forever, man. As long as you can get the wood, you can get the heat. And then they transition into bigger livestock. And along the way, they may pick up what I'm going to call like the homestead hobby. Like mine is spinning, and some people make soap, and some guys are into woodworking and, or what, you know, like whatever it is, welding things, working with metal. Like they start doing things with their hands. Like they become makers and they create value that way. And so if you think about preparedness in the homesteader, homesteaders have food covered. They came to it through food. Homesteading isn't all about food, but boy, does our life revolve around seasons and food a lot. I can't think of a homestead where you're not like, I'm growing something, I'm making food somehow. Like, is it a homestead if you're not making food? Can it be? Sure. Can you be creating value from your land? I suppose. But we always end up with the raised beds and the gardens and the potato patch and the whatever. The chickens are usually there, the ducks, the rabbits, you know, like all of those things end up getting all locked up in the homestead lifestyle. And that's because we want to build resilience. But do we really have food covered? Sort of. Some homesteaders do. But let's think about your typical homesteader. You got the chickens because they were cute and you were in Tractor Supply, and then you bought the whatever, what is it, Dumore brand feed, and you fell them that, you feed them that, and you read all the ways to raise animals, and everything you're doing is as linked to the grocery store of animals and the grocery store of fertilizer and whatever for plants as you are as a human linked to the grocery store. It's still the grocery store. So when was the last time, like, honestly answer me in the comments, if you're a homesteader, when's the last time you bought something at any feed store of any kind? Farmers Co-op, Tractor Supply, whatever feed store you have in your area, the Coffee Collective in Kentucky, which is the organic one. When was the last time you did that? I know that the last time we bought something at the feed store was last week. Yeah, Donna's saying last week. What would you do if you couldn't buy something at the feed store? Have you thought about that? Many of you probably have. Haas says 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. So we're all still going to the feed store. I'm even going to the feed store, and I have a fodder tree system, guys. So I'm not calling you out. I'm calling me out too, just so you know. So do we really have food covered if we still have to go to the feed store once a month. So for me, it's a mindset shift, right? If we think about what we're preparing for as homesteaders, then thinking about preparing for our animals, just like we would ourselves, for the most likely problems we could have, gets us ready for a World War III scale event way better than preparing our homestead for the World War III scale event. And a lot of people are worried about what's going to happen after the election with rioting and World War III right now. That's what people are worried about, right? And then you mix in the cyber attacks and all that other stuff. But if you think about those when you prepare, you have a tendency to over specialize on that thing and not just be ready to be resilient through whatever happens. Isaac says trapping is a great way to feed dogs. Yep. Except when everybody's trapping, there's less to trap. And so it's a great skill to build. I took a trapping class this year over at the Sequatchie School, and it was a great class. And I bought some traps and I brought them home. And have I used them since then? No. So I need to put those puppies out and see if I can catch something. I also need to keep my cats out of them because I don't want to catch my cats, which means I have to think about where that happens, right? Like, how do I exercise that? Because it's great to learn it, but then you got to do it, right? And skills are a really important thing to build into your life. But when we're preparing for World War III, we are making a grave error. Because we're going to be all ready for radiation, but unfortunately didn't think about, you know, how I'm going to get tomato seed next year, for example. So these are the five overlooked preps that I thought from the homesteader mindset that happens. And the first one is one that you will use every day of your life. And I see Jen's mentioning your herbal apothecary. We will talk about that today, I promise. But this is medical. It's so often the case that we see homesteaders saying, I have this big problem and I don't have any of the supplies I need. I've been guilty of that. Did I have colostrum when we had lambs being born this year? No, I did not. All I had to do was think about how the birthing process works and what happens if I get a bottle lamb and actually decide to raise it, which I didn't think was ever going to happen to me. And then it happened to me. Because I thought I'd just let it die. But then I was like, no, this is a perfectly healthy one that's just a triplet. So now, you know, that's on hand. So you need both the supplies for your livestock, but then also the supplies for your humans. And the interesting thing about medical supplies, Chuck Peoples from Homestead Medical probably could talk about this, is many of them overlap. Especially for the first aid stuff, like gauze is gauze is gauze. And like the horse leg wrap, you know, the stretchy stuff that sticks in all the crazy colors, works great on humans too. So you don't need your horse stuff and your human stuff necessarily for the supplies. But more important than that is the training and the learning. Because did you know that as a homesteader, you could go out dressed like I am today with your arms bare, take your rabbit out of the cage, and those little guys with their back feet have really, really, really sharp toenails. And all it takes is one scratch here, opening an arterial bleed and no way to stop the bleed if I'm by myself. And I literally could die. I could die in 90 seconds because I could bleed out. And, you know, like you pass out and then you bleed out and then you're screwed and you just died by rabbit. Now, nobody wants on their headstone was a great homesteader, death by rabbit, right? None of us want that. So if you have the supplies, but they're not with you, when the rabbit hits you in the arm, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Do you have a way to call for help? Or do you have EDC, everyday carry, with you? That's some basic things that might include some ways to stop bleeding. Like, oh, I don't know, a tourniquet that's not a crappy tourniquet. Homesteadmedical.us is a great place to get supplies. This is a good time to say that. Chuck Peoples also does the second part of medical that homesteaders tend to deprioritize, and they do it because it's expensive. They perceive this thing as too expensive because homesteaders tend to be frugality minded. And that is training. The best decision I ever made, knowing that I needed to know more, was to take advantage of somebody's offer to buy me a medical training class because I was stuck in the poverty mindset about it. And I took this class and it was very intense. And I tell you what, I'm very confident to this day that getting a tourniquet on myself or somebody else is something I can do properly. Right? Red Flyer Media says I need to go through his classes. I need to take one of his classes too. I haven't taken Chuck's class, but I know where he's coming from and I know the people he's worked with. And I was signed up for one of his classes when my stepfather was dying. So I ended up missing the class because I flew out of town. No, I think I was really sick that day. But anyway, it was all around that same time. And it is my intention to go take one of his classes in the next 12 months, because the other thing about training is regular ongoing training does you a lot better from different instructors, does you a lot better than just train one time and never do it again. So have you learned what you need to know? Do you have the things on you that you should have when you're out and about on your homestead? And then if you have that nailed for your homestead, if there's a problem where you actually have to leave or a bigger scale thing, or you're out and about and something happens, guess what you already have on you? Guess what you already know how to do, right? And then for the homesteader, taking that training beyond just, you know, the stop the bleed sort of stuff and into a much more advanced understanding of first aid and medical is very helpful, because there is inevitably a barbed wire problem or a broken leg problem or a sick animal problem or a sick human problem. And the more you can add to your wealth of knowledge in the medical arena, the better you are. And if you are the only person in your house who can do that or who has put time on that, that is a problem. On the homestead, if you are not alone on your homestead, which I know some of you are, I know what that feels like. If you have multiple people involved on your homestead, like we do here now, and only one person is the medical person, which this was kind of like Jenny was the most advanced medical person here when she was a holler neighbor in the area. I mean, she is a holler neighbor, but you know, she's not in the area anymore. And we would get to a point and then she'd come help. Well, what if she needed help, right? So it's one of those areas that everybody needs to put time in on. It doesn't work to have the designated medical person. Now, you may have a designated medical person. If Chuck Peoples lived near us, he would be our designated medical person here, but we would still be learning how to take care of stuff, because what if Chuck goes down? What if Chuck's not around? What if Chuck's, you know, on the other end of the property and we need something here right now? You got to know what to do. You have to know where to find the stuff, how it's organized, if it's not your everyday carry that you need, and all of that. And that's my first thing. So how many of you feel like you're totally ready medically from the homesteader standpoint, right? Y or N in the comments. I'm just curious. Because my second item, which we're going to move on to next, is something where you would really want medical training while you're doing it. I've got some N's. Jen didn't say yes, but she probably should just say yes because she's pretty well equipped. Yeah. So we've got some yeses and some no's. That's good. I'm glad to see that. The ends know what to do and the yeses can help you and they can tell you where they got the information. Because if your internet's down and you need to look up the thing, can you do that? Like if I need to use antibiotics and I don't know which antibiotics to use for something from my supply, what do I do? You got to have the printed out reference right there, not the internet reference, because you may not be able to get the internet to work. Yeah. Oh, Donna won the class at SRF. So she's an N, but she's about to be a Y. She's going to get better at that. Okay. So the second thing is bugging out. Your plan on the homestead is to bug in. And that is a great plan. Heck, my plan is to bug in on my homestead. That's always been my plan. I remember I was sitting on a flight with a doctor who was an infectious disease specialist. And he was like, do you have your flu shot? This is way before the CV thing happened. And I was like, no, I don't get those things because they don't work. And I don't want to, like, I don't know what the side effects are. And why would I do that? I just get the flu and I'm sick and then I'm better. And then I have immunity. And he was like, but what if the bad one comes? We know eventually the bad one will come. What are you going to do? And I was like, I'm going to stay on my homestead. Now, what we've learned about that since that time is my bugging in plan, while valid, would not necessarily have precluded me from getting the flu had it been a flu that like people's like things can still spread, I guess is what I'm saying. But for 6 weeks, I was able to bug in. It's just the thing lasted for like more than a year. And eventually I got it. And the good part about the eventually part of that is by the time I got it, a lot more was known about it than had I gotten it out of the chute. However, had I gotten it out of the chute and not known that there was a problem, I would have done all the things you do to get over things like that, right? So my plan is to bug in. But what is your plan if you have to leave quickly? Do you have a plan for that? Where are you going? What are you bringing with you? How fast can you grab the things you're bringing with you? How are you getting there? What if some of you are home and some of you are not home? How do you find each other? What will you use to travel? What about your livestock? Are you just leaving your livestock and you're like, I'm out? Do you have a plan to move your livestock or take care of your livestock or give your livestock access to the things they need? What is your plan for bugging out? So this is one where you could spend a lot of money on infrastructure and whatnot to be able to bug out. I'm not sure that's the right thing. I think more about knowing what the steps are you're going to take than having things related to bugging out is what's important. Like my bug out plan has always been grab my hiking backpack and go, because my hiking backpack has the stuff in it. And I noticed last weekend when I grabbed my hiking backpack and went, because I needed to camp and I didn't really have any time to pack, that it worked pretty well. But what happens with my hiking backpack is I like get in there and I pull stuff out for other reasons. And if I don't put it back in, then grabbing my hiking backpack and going isn't great. And that's if I have to go on foot. I'd much rather drive. But are we going to take all the cars so that I drive one and Nighthawk drives one and Tactical drives one? Or are we all going in one car? Are we pulling my camper or not pulling my camper? What about the sheep? What about the chickens and the ducks? What about the dogs and the cats? And where am I going? And do I have agreements in place if I'm ending up at somebody else's homestead that there's a plan if I show up with my sheep that we can, like, you know, put them somewhere? It's okay for us to show up. Bugging out is something that if people in East Tennessee had realized how bad that rain was going to be and flooding might happen a few days in advance, it would have been very easy to get out of there with your livestock and whatnot and end up somewhere. But who has a plan for that? And where are you going? And then what's your backup plan for that? So bugging out is more, for me, it's more of a thought exercise and then backing out, like, what things do I need? Jen says, still keep a bug out bag too. Yeah, I have a bug out bag that's more designed for, I need to go to the hospital right now, and less designed for through hiking. Although I did add some things about if I have to sleep, what's my shelter look like? But I'll tell you what, my favorite shelter is that hiking tent in there that doesn't weigh very much. So, you know, if I can bring my giant backpack, I will. If I can't, then there are some backup plans that we have. And what if you have to bug out and you were in your car at Walmart 25 miles from your house? Because in my world, Walmart's like 25 miles from my house if I go to Walmart. So that means I'm not home and then I got to get home, right? Yeah, Haas says, I have a bunch of reptiles. Took me a while to figure out what to do. Now, if this makes you, who does this make anybody uncomfortable when I bring this up? Like, oh crap, what am I going to do with my animals? Does it make you uncomfortable? I see I need my blackout curtains installed here. We have like this sun halo going behind my logo. That's kind of cool. Jen's has 7 days of supplies in it. If it makes you uncomfortable, that's good. That means that you can start thinking about it, but don't do it from fear. Just think, okay, what do I already have that I can put in place? And some of that's communications with your people. Some of that may be taking an old backpack you're not using and throwing some stuff in it so you can just grab it and go. For me, something I didn't realize until my cousins went through the Paradise Fire is I have some family heirlooms that are very dear to me. And it's nothing expensive, but my grandfather was a rock hound, and then he also made jewelry from things he found. And I have a piece of jewelry that I love. And it's this big. And if I don't know right where it is and can't just grab it on the way out, then it's just going to be left behind if I have to leave. And so the things I thought about was like, if I have a packet with that and some identifying things that are helpful to have, like my passport and a little bit of money, but I don't keep that in my backpack by the front door because that'd be weird and that's probably a security risk, I know where to go to grab that and grab and go. It's also in a fire safe. So, you know, it's not, as I said, it's not super valuable. It's just important to me. And if I lost everything, but not that, that would be awesome. And then if I lost everything but my life and that's the way it is, then that's the way it is, right? So when you're bugging out, is there something you'd want to grab like that? And how do you know where it is? Where do you keep it? How do you prioritize what's going to happen? You know, and obviously you're not bringing a big dining room table or something with that. Okay, third thing. This one is overlooked by most homesteaders, although maybe not most of the people listening to this live stream right now, and that is security. Security. People who object to homesteading as a prep because somebody will steal their tomatoes are not on my live stream right now. They're not homesteaders, right? But I mean beyond just carrying a gun. So a lot of people come to, you know, some homesteaders are like, why would I need a gun? Because all I'm doing is raising vegetables and I'm peaceful and I'm out here and what could possibly go wrong? And then they start realizing after some things have happened on their homestead that maybe they do want to have a gun. And so they start carrying a gun. But what good is your gun if you don't know how to use your gun? So this is one where I start at training. And I don't just mean training with your gun. I mean, if you have not grown up thinking about what security means, which from my perspective, having done what I've done, and I'm by no means an expert, it's more about not being or not, the situation never happening to the extent that that can happen than dealing with a situation that happens, right? Which is a mindset thing and a situational awareness thing and how you set stuff up. So training. This is why when Sonny has come in, Sonny Puzikas, and done his, you know, conflict de-escalation classes, holy cow. If I had not been coordinating SRF, that would have been the one I wanted to be in 100%, right? That's where I want to start. But then also, if you are going to carry a firearm, get pistol training. I was thinking about this one because Dawn Gorham went out. She's had a permit. She carries a gun, right? But she hadn't had, like, the fighting pistol training at Tactical Response or something like that. She took a class like that this weekend. And she totally knows what I mean when I say, like, it may be a basic, like, pistol class to get that extra training beyond just, like, what you get when they teach you how to, like, shoot the target and not your foot, right, when you get your gun. But that the mindset change when you have that and the confidence to deal with situations that will just come up with the mechanics of your gun and all of that. And in different positions, being able to fire more accurately, the mindset change for that's huge. And then you get motivated to keep practicing because it's one of those things. If you don't keep practicing, you're not good. So that's one part of security, but then also, what's the plan if somebody goes wrong on your homestead? Who does what? If there's a two-legged threat, like, does everybody run outside and go after the two-legged threat? Is somebody staying inside while they're calling 911 while somebody deals with the two-legged threat outside? Are there different areas of your homestead that you need to cover? Are there choke points there? Also, what about four-legged problems? What if a bear comes on your property and it's mad? What if it's a cougar? I don't mean a two-legged cougar. I mean the four-legged cougar, right? How hard is it to get to your place, onto your place? Do you have a perimeter fence? Do you have thorny hedges? What does that look like? Are there lights that come on? Is it better off without lights? Like, have you thought that through? Do you know when someone is coming? Do you have a way to know in advance? I know people who have very extensive camera systems, motion sensors that, like, make a noise in the house when somebody comes up the driveway, for example. Not very expensive to put some of these things in, and it can at least give you a heads up that something's up, right? Can you fight if you have to? Can you actually fight? You think you can fight, but when's the last time you got in a fight, if ever? Like, can you really fight? And then is that the best thing to do? Is it better just to not be there when the bad guy comes, right? So all of those things. And then how are you set for other ways of making your place less attractive as a target? Because I know that barky canines make my place less attractive, or make anybody's place less attractive. It doesn't mean nobody would ever try something. It's just big dogs look scary, and it's more of a bother than a place that doesn't have dogs, for example. So if they can't even see your place and don't know it's there, there's that. Or Haas says, deer come and wipe out your garden like they did this year to me. Yeah, like you need to protect yourself from the deer because that's your four-legged threat, right? Yeah. And Jen says, not just using, but keeping your firearm in working order. And if you're practicing on the regular, then you know if it's in order or if it's not in order. There's that too. So that's one that, like, most homesteaders who come at it from the sort of the hippie side, the hippie chicken vegetable side, just have not put their mind to that. And then ones who come from the prepper side, they're like, oh, we do drills on the weekend, you know, like they've got it covered. But it's also one that if you are resistant to thinking about this because it makes you have to think about bad things, that's your frog to eat. Start eating the security frog and hit it one thing at a time and have a plan in mind. Because if you've thought through some of these things, if something goes wrong, you've at least had the thoughts, so you have a place to start as opposed to panicking in a situation that you never saw coming. It's way more painful. This is a do hard things thing. It's way more painful to have not done any training of any type or thought about anything or communicated with your family about what you do if. It's way more painful in that situation to deal with a problem than if you've had those conversations, which are uncomfortable when you have them, or done the work to get training, which is uncomfortable to do sometimes, like when you're rolling out around in the dirt, shooting at targets, that's not comfortable. Then, I'd rather do the latter than the former. But getting over the mental block, if you are in denial about violence in the world, can be really hard. And I'm sharing this because I had that block. I was raised by a pacifist family. I'm fairly pacifistic. The only real fight I've been in was in high school, and it was because somebody attacked me and I had to hit back, and I frankly didn't hit very well. And then I got some self-defense training after that, right? Right. And then if somebody really wants to kill me because they're like an assassin or something, I'm not controlling for that. They're probably going to be successful if that's like, if somebody really wanted, like, I'm going to kill Nicole Sauce, you know. It's not that I'm giving up. It's just that the unexpected sudden attack is a lot harder to be ready for. And I think in most cases when that happens, unless you have a large security detail, you're just kind of in trouble at that point, unless you saw it coming. And then maybe some mindset and situational awareness can really help you, because I'll tell you what is unlikely to happen is random crime against me in a dark alley, mostly because I'm pretty careful being in dark alleys. I was not always, but I'm pretty careful about that. And be honest with yourself about if you really have the skills that you think you need. Just because you hunt doesn't mean you can use your gun in self-defense. It doesn't. That's why training is so dang important, and different instructors and different classes with a learner's heart. Okay, the next thing, item number 4, food for livestock. I started with food for livestock, and it's an actual item. Like, be honest. What is your plan? What is it if you just can't fall back on tractor supply? How do you regenerate food for your animals? One of the reasons we raise rabbits here is that they're delicious. But another reason we raise rabbits is that we can feed those to our dogs. And we have some regular ongoing production from the rabbits. And rabbits eat things from the food forest. They eat things, they eat grass. And yes, we feed them rabbit pellets because those are nutritionally balanced for rabbits. And it's very helpful to have those. But if we didn't have them, we would figure out, we would be feeding them as best we could with what we have until we could get pellets again, right? And then when we have the rabbits, we can feed ourselves. We can feed the dogs. That's the deal. And then be honest with yourself. How often do you rely on the grocery store for the humans at your homestead? Like, really? Are you really eating from your homestead? Or is it more like a hobby homestead? You haven't really, like, figured out how to cycle through the seasonal eating because you just don't like it or you don't want to. Like, can you produce at that scale? And you're just sort of in a holding pattern and it'll take you 6 months to ramp up if you have to. Or are you like, actually, I'm not terribly good at raising green beans and probably should work on the green bean growing, right? There's two different things there. Because it's, I am not anti buy your stuff at the store because you want the stuff at the store. I am anti that for me most of the time. But I am not like, hey, judgy sort of thing. It doesn't, it's not a thing for me. It's more about if you're planning to produce your own food on the homestead, can you really do it at a scale to produce it, preserve it, cook with it? And that's a whole cycle. That's like a whole full-time thing to learn. And if you've got one part of it done, great, write down the other parts. Now that I've produced it, how do I preserve it? Now that I've preserved it, how do I use all this stuff? How do I make it taste good? Am I growing things on the property to make it taste good? Right? And this is where community connections and your underground network is amazing, because there's an in-between step here where if you're particularly good at producing sheep, you might know somebody who's particularly good at producing spices. And you might be like, you've got the spices, I've got the sheep, and I don't have any spices because they're eating everything on my property, and you trade. And that's a very simplified view. The other thing that happens with the underground network and connections and the commercial system is you may not be able to source something here, but they can source it somewhere else. Or they see a disruption, a supply chain coming, and they let you know. So it goes beyond food for livestock and food for humans and into your community connections. And if you're building your homestead without building your homestead community, that's you need that to bug out somewhere. You need that to source things if you need to source that. You need that for training and education. Like, it all starts there. It all goes back to community every time we talk about this. And then item number 5 is fitness. Because you're working out all day on your homestead, so you're absolutely fit, right? And you're healthy, right? Can you do everything you need to do on your homestead by hand if you can't get gas? Do you have a plan for that? Like, can you physically, are you healthy? Be honest. Are you healthy? What's your plan to get healthy if you're not healthy? Is everybody in your family fit and healthy? And if the answer to that is, well, we could do better. Because even if you're working all day on the homestead, if you're not putting some effort towards making your body stronger, and you go into older age where you start having muscle attrition, then you have a shorter timeline before you have mobility problems than somebody who is putting effort into making their body stronger. Even if what they're doing is throwing around bales of hay every day too. And for this, and this kind of goes also to homestead design for old age, if you know you need to put effort into it, do you have dedicated space where you can lift weights or use resistant bands? Like, do you have a way to do that? Do you have the knowledge to do this? It goes back to training. Have you reached out to SHTF Fitness or somebody else? CrossFit Garage. Andy McCann from there, I met him in person at SRF. Great guy, willing to help people troubleshoot. This is what I have. This is the time I have. And then this is where I'm going. Jenny says, if I hadn't worked so hard before I got sick, she had cancer, I'd never come out on the other side. She had a scary bout. Scary, scary bout. And she had just dedicated years of her life to taking back her fitness. It's possible. I've seen so many people in our community take this on. But it's also really easy to ignore. And it's really easy to buy convenience foods that aren't healthy for us when we've had a long day of chicken processing. And I am as guilty of it as anybody. What I've tried to do personally is find convenience foods that are a little bit more healthy. But, you know, I'm not going to, again, nobody's perfect. You're not going to go all in. But if you're like, actually, yeah, I need to think about that. I get winded walking up the hill, or whatever it is, you have your own thing. Dedicated space to working out helps you work out. And that means taking space from something else to do it too. Nutrition is so important. And the longer like we learn about how nutrition impacts us, the more it's like food is medicine. It literally is. And you're on a homestead, so you have all the tools you need to do this right. So integrate them. And then there's your living apothecary, Jenny. So the other thing is, if you're growing food, you can be growing medicine. And if you start learning which herbs work for the things that happen in your life, if you can't get whatever at the store for your cold, you can have mullein that will help with congestion. It may not be quote unquote as good as chloroseden D or whatever people are using as decongestants these days, but it's better than nothing. And it just grows, which is kind of cool. Okay, so those are my five things. And when I was done with them, I was like, man, there's an overarching thing that is part of all of these things that is very, very important. And that's, you're going to get a bonus item today. Communication. Communication. And I'm saying communication, not communications, although it includes that. Does everybody know what the plans are? What to do? Where the things are? How they're organized? Does everybody get the training on your homestead? Does everybody know how to communicate with each other and find each other if you're bugging in versus bugging out? Like, do you have ways to talk to each other if the cell network is down, if the internet goes down, or, you know, even if it's like our plan is to get on the four-wheelers and drive next door, which literally has been the plan here at one time. Do you know what that plan is? Do you know how to find each other? Do you have like rally points if you have to like separate in a crisis situation? Communication. And it's not just communication, like communications using a radio or having other ways to talk to each other or leaving a note at a designated place. But can you communicate with each other in a crisis? Because if you're already fighty and hard, having problems with the communications with each other, like just communicating every day, priority of projects on your homestead, amplify that by about 100 tension rise and tell me what you think is going to happen communication wise. Investing in like better communication is so important. And I think about like the last few weeks, Tactical and I have had tense discussions, like not fights, but like we're both clearly frustrated with the conversation. And it's because we're trying to solve a problem that we haven't found a solution for. And the thing that's worked well in those is that none of them have been blaming somebody else for causing a problem, which I will say that I am the cause of a lot of this problem on my homestead. But he hasn't been like, you're a poopy head because you caused this problem over time. It's been about, but how do we solve this problem, right? And I don't know that I could have communicated in that way had I not done a lot of work on how to take the blame out of conversation. And how to keep going, even if it's uncomfortable in conversation, because it's better to have the conversation and be done with it than sit around and fear the conversation. So it's not just communication, like what tools do you use, but also how do you communicate and what does that look like? And with that, we are to the end of this episode. As a homesteader, you are likely to be more prepared in many ways than preppers who have lots of stuff in the city, because you have skills. You have already started thinking about how do I regenerate some of these things I know I need. But it's very easy to fall into the sort of easy mindset of, you know, I'm good to go because I got the homestead. But how would you weather it for real if you had a for real problem? And then if you see weaknesses, what can you do now, 1 week at a time, 1 day at a time, to start eating that frog that you're like putting off doing? Because I've listed five things. And some of you are like, oh, yeah, I'm not good on that one. I'm not very good at the medical. And some of you are like, I don't want to actually touch my gun. And some of you are like, I need to get fit, right? So one of those will resonate with you more than others. And that's cool. Now that you feel that in the back of your head, like, oh, crap. What's one thing you can do on that thing next week? Because when you start doing that and then start talking about it with all of us in our community, you're going to find out that you have it nailed. Like if you would have asked me 5 years ago about security, I would have been like, I'm just not going to talk about it. The world is violent, but it's out there. It's not here. I was in total denial. Do I have security nailed? No. Am I way better off than I was 5 years ago? Absolutely. And you can be too. With that, if you like the show and want to support the work I'm doing here, you can do it in two ways. One, get your coffee where? Holoroast.com. Two, consider becoming a member. Find out more at livingfreeintennessee.com. With that, guys, go out. Make it a great week.